There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Now, joining me in the studio, we've got two fantastic experts who are here to answer your questions. Dr. Stephanie Roman is here. She's a scientific sales advisor from the St. Vincent Group. And we've got Dr. Sarah Elliott, veterinary director at the British Veterinary Hospital on Al Wasl Road. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Thanks for having us.
You both sounded a bit tentative there. It's fine. Don't worry. We've already got quite a few questions coming in on ready for your attentions. So what kind of things do you come across in kind of day-to-day practice, Dr. Sarah? What's coming in at the minute?
Well, we've just done not a day-to-day thing. We've just had a sort of huge surgery that we did where we had a dog who came in who actually had a big tear in his diaphragm.
Oh.
Which meant that his liver, his spleen, all of his intestines had moved forward and were sitting next to his heart, stopping him from breathing.
What had caused the tear?
We think it happened about 18 months ago. He was taken on, he was found on the street in Sharjah, missing an eye. And I think the poor lad had been hit by a car at that stage. So, yeah, we fixed him up and he's doing really, really well.
That's a huge surgery to undertake, I'd imagine. How many hours were you in for?
Not as long as we were expecting to be. The actual surgery time was less than 2 hours.
Oh, crikey. There you go, people. If any tears in your diaphragm, Dr. Sarah's your lady. But in terms of skin conditions, heat concerns, dietary things, Dr. Stephanie's fantastic on. So any questions relating to your pet's diet, do get in touch. Now, Dr. Stephanie, what was your first pet?
My first pet was a Rottweiler dog. And she was
straight in there. No hamster for Dr. Stephanie.
No, we just went big guns from the beginning. Yeah, she was a rescue dog, actually. So she'd been really mistreated and had some behavioural issues as a result. But she was an amazing dog, an amazing first dog.
Isn't it funny how that first pet always holds such a kind of special place?
Yeah. She was a beautiful dog, but always very fearful for her whole life.
And I guess that's the issues in terms of rescue animals. You really don't know what they've come up against in their past. A friend of mine has a rescue dog who's really afraid of their barbecue and fire sources and aww, gets really skittish around that, which unfortunately from the barbecue is not able to be moved and it's right by the gates. They have big drama every time they try and take her out for a walk. And it's like,
stressful, isn't it? They don't forget.
No, they don't. What about you, Dr. Sarah? What was your first pet?
My first pet was actually a cat when I lived in Egypt as a child, and our gardener turned up with a laundry basket on his bike and this absolutely feral Siamese cat that he sort of let into the house. It disappeared on top of the fridge and nobody saw it for 4 weeks.
Oh, what was it eating? Your stuff?
I've got no idea. I was only about 3 at the time, but I just remember my mum telling us we had a cat and us staring at the fridge wondering how that was a pet.
And what did you call it?
She was called Sheba.
Oh, very apt. Well, now, on the topic of cats, they are kind of notoriously a little bit naughty. And a survey has come out in the UK of 2,000 cat owners who said they typically have to stop their pet getting up to no good 1,350 times a year. So this climbing up curtains, helping themselves to dinner on the table, knocking over ornaments. A person surveyed said they have to stop their cat from drinking water out of a false teeth mug beside the bed.
Oh.
Grim. Any cat confessions to share this afternoon, Dr. Stephanie? Any naughty behaviour of your lot?
Oh, not a recent one, but I used to work in a clinic. This was in Australia, and we had a clinic cat. Another rescue is a common theme here.
Mm-hmm.
He, bless him, would eat anything in sight. So people's curries for lunch, you couldn't turn your back for 2 seconds. He'd be on the bench just cleaning up your leftovers.
Sort of scavenger.
Yeah, it was a complete scavenger. We had to really watch him quite closely.
So that's an issue with cats. I think of dogs being more the ones that will, you know, eat a pack of butter or eat a raw chicken off the counter and things like that.
Yes, he was a true dog at heart.
Was he?
Mm.
What about you, Dr. Sarah? Any naughty cats over the years? Or have you had them well trained, like the animal expert that you are?
Of course, mine are well trained. No, mine are naughty as can be. But we did have one client who had quite a problem because her cat used to eat holes in her underwear.
Oh.
And so every time she went in a drawer.
Yeah,
every time she went for a night out or something, she had big holes in her underwear.
My first pet was a hamster called Lucy, and we put her in next to the curtains on the wall. Next thing we knew, drew the curtains a few weeks later, and she'd eaten about a metre square hole out of the curtain fabric for her nest. I don't know. She was a great pet, though, I have to say. And it is really interesting, because then we got a hamster after she died, and she wasn't the same. They hadn't have the same heart. Do share your first pets. We'd love to hear 4001, or you can message us for free on Dubai Eye Messenger line. We're going to be talking about senior pets later in the show. So if you've got any concerns about your cat or dog that you feel is getting a little bit elderly and any specific health concerns, do get in touch and we'll try our best to answer your questions. Now, does this sound familiar?
Yogi Bear is smarter than the average bear. Yogi Bear is always in the ranger's hair. At a picnic table, you will find him there. Stuffing down more goodies than the average bear. He will sleep till noon, but before it's dark, you'll have every picnic basket that's in Jellystone Park. Yogi has it better than a millionaire. That's because he's smarter than the average bear.
We have found the real Yogi Bear, believe it or not. I loved hearing that. It was a bit of nostalgia. It really was fantastic. So Yogi Bear was famed for eating picnics out of the park and teasing that ranger. Now, this has just come out. This is in the Khaleej Times, but a story from New Jersey. A black bear has devoured 2 dozen cupcakes left in a baker's car. Broke into the car to eat 2 dozen cupcakes. It was basically too much temptation. The bear smashed a window and left only smeared icing and a paw print behind. What a legend. They're not pressing charges. The baker says while she didn't want her property destroyed, she doesn't want the bear to be killed. Quite right too. I mean, who can resist 2 dozen cupcakes?
I sympathise.
Oh, I've been there. They were awakened by a dog barking and a crunching sound as the bear made his escape.
Did they see the bear, or was it just the neighbour?
The paw print was the evidence. What a cheeky thing. Now, questions coming in for you guys. Going back to cats, Ralph has said, our cat has an extremely loose top right canine, and I can't get an appointment until Wednesday to do an extraction. What can I do to help him in the meantime? Dr. Sarah, any advice on loose tooth in cat?
I think, I mean, much as you're not going to want to hear it, the loose tooth is probably the tip of the iceberg, and there's probably quite a few other teeth that have been going bad for quite a while. The canines are normally some of the last teeth to actually have cavities and have problems. So, you know, this little cat has actually been in pain for a little while, which means that waiting till Wednesday isn't going to be that much longer in something that's taken about 6 months. In the meantime, you can feed soft food, but also offer dry, because some cats will actually grab hold of the kibble, the dry food, and take it directly to the back of the mouth to avoid using the front teeth
altogether. Okay. So is that speaking to gum disease or a different kind of illness or condition?
There are genetics involved. Some cats will have bad teeth because they've had bad upbringings or bad diets. There's a lot of viruses to blame for these. A lot of the cat flu viruses that the kittens on the streets get here actually cause bad teeth throughout their lives. And we will see some fairly major extractions in cats by the age of 15, 18 months.
Really? So young. So it's not necessarily a kind of an ongoing issue through poor care or poor lifestyle. It can just be
Bad luck.
Yeah. And what about pain relief?
Pain relief, particularly, we haven't got on here whether this cat is old or not, but normally for pain relief, cats can be quite sensitive to a lot of pain relief. So it's something, check with the vet before you try administering any pain relief on your own. But you want to actually be having blood tests and making sure kidney function is normal.
Okay, I hope that helps, Ralph. 4001 to have your question answered, or if you want to do it absolutely free, you can message us on the Dubai Eye Messenger app. More than welcome to give us a call if you'd like. We can go into a little bit more detail on 04 43 1010. Julia's been in touch with this, saying we have a lab/terrier mix. She's about 2 years old. We got her from a rescue centre about a year ago. She has some kind of persistent skin infection, terrible dandruff and scabs that come off her daily. We have to vacuum the couch if she lies on it for more than an hour. The vets have checked her for usual mites and such. We tried loads of different food, but she barely touches them. about 3 months ago, we switched to grain-free, thinking it was a food allergy. The thing is, she'll go a week without eating. It gets to the point where she throws up bile because she's so hungry and won't touch it. She takes all the treats you can give her, but won't touch any dry foods. It's really frustrating. Dr. Stephanie, any insights there on the allergy side? I didn't realise grain-free was a thing with animals.
Yeah, it's probably a really common misconception. People are very quick to blame grains for allergies in pets, but what science tells us is actually it's very, very uncommon for cats and dogs to have a grain allergy. It doesn't mean it can't happen, but it's very, very rare. So I would suggest to the listener that she really tries to get a definitive diagnosis for this dog. I have a very itchy dog myself, so I completely sympathise. It's not an easy thing to deal with because they're just itchy all the time, and it's very frustrating as a pet owner. This dog could have two things going on. There could be some environmental allergy. There could be potentially a food allergy as well. So I think that it's really important that she goes through a diagnostic process with the vet to try to get a definitive diagnosis so she knows what she's treating.
And what does that normally involve, trying to get a diagnosis like that?
There's a couple of different things that the vet might do, but probably the best thing would be to do a food elimination trial. So that would involve putting this dog on a very strict diet, often a hydrolyzed protein diet, so something that's not likely to trigger an allergic response. That takes about 8 to 12 weeks. So
oh, wow,
the owners
time.
Have to be very committed and not feed anything else.
Yeah, no other begging
treats.
From the table.
Exactly.
Okay.
But that can get them a very good answer once the vet starts to reintroduce different things, maybe some chicken, some beef, and over time you will be able to work out exactly what the dog is allergic to and then avoid that.
Hope that helps, Julia. Now, Dr. Sarah, C-sections in animals.
Yes.
I think I hadn't even thought about it, and then I saw this news story. Headline, police officer delivers baby deer by C-section after mother hit by car. This is extraordinary. So a police officer was called to a scene. A deer was hit by a car in New Jersey, and he saw the animal but noticed in her stomach it was moving, and he basically performed a C-section and saved the baby deer from inside her stomach.
It's a lovely story.
Isn't that amazing? And there's beautiful heartwarming photos of him kind of warming up the baby deer and getting the lungs going. Fawn, I think, is the technical term. The Bambi. To get her going. So warmed him up on the chest and got those underdeveloped lungs going. So what a lovely story this is, first of all, police officer going above and beyond the call of duty. But you raise an interesting point about this is actually quite standard practice in Australia, is that right?
That's right. We were talking about this and sort of run over animals in Australia. One of the most common things that you should do is check the pouch, because often your kangaroo that's been run over or any other little marsupial will actually have a joey in the pouch. And the number that are saved each year and hand raised.
It's by having a little scoop around. Dr. Stephanie, you're from Australia.
Yes.
Have you ever saved a joey?
I have.
Have
actually.
You?
Yes.
Have you? What happened?
It's something that as a vet student you're quite educated about. So, you know, every dead animal that we were driving past on the side of the road would always check everything. But there was one day I was working in a clinic on a main road, and there was a bad car accident, and a car had actually hit a kangaroo. And so we, you know, rushed out, of course, and the kangaroo needed to be put to sleep because it had a lot of broken legs. But we checked the pouch and there was a little baby, so we were able to bring the baby back and call a wildlife carer. So it's an important thing to do. Yeah, in that
I was, I wouldn't say saddened, but I was somewhat surprised to learn. My kind of immediate assumption was inside the pouch, it's all just this little kind of fur-lined little pocket. It's not.
It's quite gross inside.
It's gross inside.
And very smelly.
Is it really?
Yes, it's not very nice.
No, I was expecting it just be like, you know, just like a little cozy pouch. And it's not. There's all sorts of kind of, I don't want to say guts and things, but there's stuff going on in there.
Yeah, it's kind of moist and... You know, a perfect little environment for a hairless little creature to grow.
But my stuffed toys lied to me, basically, is what you're saying.
It's not like cartoons.
No, it's a shame. Hisham's been in touch saying, I was bitten by a stray kitten last night. It was outside my office and I gave her some food from my finger. Do I need a shot?
I think the lucky thing here is that we live in a country that's considered rabies free or well controlled. So the main thing that we worry about with stray cats, dogs would be rabies, and thankfully that's not much of an issue here. You want to clean the wound, check the wound, watch out for infection, but say thankfully we don't have that killer disease of rabies here.
Okay, hope that helps. In terms of bites and scratches, is there anything we do need to be aware of as humans that we can get from animals, or anything that they can pass on to us, like the ringworms of the world?
I mean, there's various infections that you can get from bites. I'd say one interesting but rather disgusting fact is that a human mouth is actually contains more bacteria than most dog or cat mouths.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
So you're actually more likely to get an infection from being bitten by a human than you are from an animal.
Really?
But as far as diseases go, you know, if it's a bite, then one of the problems is that the tooth punctures, comes out, it's only a small wound and the wound heals, mm-hmm. which is almost like injecting bacteria mm-hmm. into your skin. So that's the wound that can get the nasty abscess or nasty infection.
Okay, hope that helps, Susham. You don't need to go to the doctors. Keep us posted, though. Message here, no name on this one, saying, my 11-month-old Jack Russell Terrier was spayed on May 18th. We were advised by the vet that she should come back 10 to 14 days to have the stitches removed. We've been keeping her in her cone during the day. Ah, the cone of shame. But allowing her to sleep in bed with us cone-free, and that has kept her from chewing. Well, last night that must have changed, because when we woke up, she's now free of stitches. There's no bleeding or anything, and she looks healed up, to be honest. Should I do anything? Does she need to be seen as an emergency, or should she, and does she should still be seen by the vet the next week as she removed the stitches herself?
It's certainly worth keeping your post-op check. I mean, ideally, go down today and get the vet to check the wound and make sure everything has cleared up. Unfortunately, we see a huge number of these midnight munchies where people think that their pet's going to sleep at the same time as they are. But actually, you know, remember that animals sleep a lot during the day when we're actually working. So a lot of the night, they're actually bored and awake. And that's the time they do these things.
So in terms of the cone, better try and keep it on as much as possible?
Keep it on, especially most cats and dogs. If you have the cone of shame and put it on, once it's on there and they've got used to it, they're normally pretty good with it.
They get
much more upset by having it taken on and off.
Yeah, first day is always an interesting one. We had an incident with my dog where she used to let herself into this kind of guest loo we had downstairs and she didn't know her turning circle, basically, with the new cone. So she closed the door behind her and got herself locked in there. We've had dogs trying to go out of the dog door and obviously, again, not really knowing how big their head was with the new cone. So maybe just make allowances, let them out rather than using the dog door. lots of people saying cone of shame on the text line. Do get your questions in regarding anything pet related. If you've got any questions or concerns, Melanie's asking, is there a better option for the cone of shame for my newly adopted 1-year-old Cocker Spaniel who I had to have neutered yesterday? As a lively puppy, his spatial awareness is frustrating. See this, I hear you, Melanie. Also, if he really tries hard, he can just about lick the wound, and I'm concerned that the hard cone will rub on that wound.
It sounds as though the cone's too short, because he shouldn't be able to lick the wound or be able to rub it with the cone. So you probably need a longer cone.
A bigger cone of shame.
Bigger cone
More
of shame.
More shame.
More shame. But the other options you've got are either an inflatable collar that goes around the neck, almost like a beach ring, or even a bodysuit, which is like a baby grow.
That's what we did for our, again, 1-year-old Cocker Spaniel. We basically put her in a baby grow. And I don't mind dogs in clothes. I was quite pleased to have an excuse to kind of get her a little bit dressed up. But it is like, we got it from the vet, and it's got space for the tail. You need to be a bit careful when they go to the toilet so it doesn't get kind of a bit too mucky around there. But in terms of spatial awareness, it was a lot more helpful than a cone.
And they look cute.
And they look mega cute. Melanie, hope that helps, and congratulations on your newly adopted Cocker Spaniel. We'd love to know the name. If it's got a human name, all the better. Question here on diet. Asking, if a cat has an intolerance to chicken, will chicken byproduct meal cause the same intolerance?
Yes, unfortunately.
That makes things a bit more complicated.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So generally the cat or dog will have an allergy to a particular protein. So that protein will be the same for chicken or chicken byproduct meal. So what I'd recommend, if it is definitely a confirmed intolerance to chicken as a protein, to look for a diet that's either a hydrolyzed protein or a non-chicken protein. So
do they tend to add in some chicken kind of byproduct in quite a lot of meals? Need to get really careful at reading labels?
Yeah, you do have to be very careful at reading labels. Even if there's no chicken on the label, if you have a pet that's quite sensitive, sometimes fat sources can be contaminated with protein. So it's best in this situation to go to the vet and ask for a veterinary diet that's been specifically formulated for a pet with a food allergy.
Okay, I hope that helps. Regarding our Cocker Spaniel with the cone of shame, Melanie's asking, can you get these body suits from Dr. Sarah's clinic? Dr. Sarah?
Yes, you can. We'll sort one out for you.
Ah, what colour are they?
You can get zebra, so black and white, or you can get a nice red one, so either one.
Jazzy. And the Cocker Spaniel is called Harry after Prince Harry. Oh, I presume he is a redhead. Now, we are talking about senior animals this afternoon, a topic very close to my heart. We adopted an old girl who is still probably my favourite creature that's ever walked the earth. And senior pets, senior animals are actually it's a real problem here in Dubai due to the transient nature. A lot of people don't want to put the dog through the trauma perhaps of travelling or simply abandon them, unfortunately. What are the health issues that we can expect with senior cats, Dr. Sarah?
I think first thing to remember is that old age is not a disease. You're more likely to get diseases when you're older just because your luck runs out. Mm-hmm. But old age itself is not a disease. But almost like buying a new car, once you have your car for the first couple of years, you service it regularly and it works very, very well. If, on the other hand, you've got a 10, 12-year-old car, you're more likely to have the oil leak mm-hmm. or the problem with the brake. So in a pet, you can translate that to your arthritis or your problems with the teeth because the teeth haven't been looked after properly. So maintenance in pets, absolutely necessary to stop them getting these problems.
So what shall we be doing? What kind of checklist would you give to somebody who's got a... What would you define senior as, first of all? Over 8-ish?
It actually depends on the size of the animal. I mean, cats and small dogs, it's about 7 years to one human year. So that would equate to 7-8 years of age. But with a large breed dog, you're talking more like 5 years once they're into that senior bracket.
Okay. And then smaller breeds can keep on going. What's the oldest animal that you've ever come across?
Unfortunately, we lost Little Trouble this year. He reached the grand old age of 18.
Wow, that's incredible.
He was a little Pekingese.
Oh, 18. That's some going.
Had a cat in the UK that belonged to a client who was 26 years old.
Crikey.
And I mean, she was in fine fettle. She was in great form.
That's amazing. 26. I saw Burt Ward of Batman fame is claiming he's got one of the oldest dogs in the world. He's got a 25-year-old dog, which has got to be...
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So once they do get to the senior bracket, in terms of diet, do we need to be changing that diet, Dr. Stephanie?
Yes. I can't say yes enough.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, it's really, really important that we start to think about the types of diseases that they are more likely to get as seniors. And a lot of these are really preventable with nutrition. So things like arthritis, as Sarah mentioned, we can do a lot with diet to help prevent that, to help prevent the pain of arthritis. A really good diet can help prevent against a lot of other nutritional diseases like obesity, which is quite common in senior pets because they do slow down, they're not moving as much, they're less active. A lot of senior pets, you know, when they're sort of maybe 9, 10, 11, will start to suffer from cognitive dysfunction. We can do a lot with antioxidants in the diet to help prevent.
So what would come under the kind of dysfunction category? What behaviours or conditions could you start to see?
So a lot of behavioural changes. Owners often talk about their pets becoming a bit disoriented. You know, they're wandering around in the house in the middle of the night, seemingly not knowing where they are is a really common one. Sometimes cats and dogs that are inside will start to all of a sudden go to the toilet in the house when they have never done that before. And owners sometimes, you know, they think they're being quite naughty, but they're just getting a bit forgetful. Their routines have changed. So yeah, lots of things that owners might not necessarily attribute to old age.
It's really sad, isn't it? And can I ask first of all, supplements. Are supplements worth it when it comes to aging animals?
They are, but remember that a good diet should contain virtually all the supplements you need.
Okay. And how do you know when it's time to say goodbye?
I think that time is different for everybody. At my hospital, we actually have a questionnaire, an email that we send out, because every member of the family will see their pet slightly differently. Mm-hmm. And if you're filling out an end-of-life questionnaire as to when it's the time, you should be putting that on a scale, and every family member should go into a separate room and go through some of those things. You know, for instance, the person who feeds the animal might notice more that they're picky with their food and not wanting to eat. The child that used to play football with the dog notices that the dog, rather than even coming out for the football, turns their head away and sits and looks at the wall rather than go outside. So, you know, every family member has a different bond with the pet, and that needs to be taken account of. And, you know, once you put those questionnaires together and come together as a family, you can then get a better idea of who feels that the quality of life is going down and, mm-hmm. and where you've still got.
I really wish we'd done that, to be honest. We had our dog put down about a year and a half ago, and she was 12, and she was in a lot of pain. She had bad arthritis in her back legs and then seemed to be in more pain on the front. And the very selfish part of me just wanted her to be around forever and ever and, you know, look after her. And I'm not going to try not to cry. and try and look after her in her dotage. But it just wasn't fair on her.
I think we've got to be really, really aware of pain that these animals are in. And just because an animal is maybe not sitting on the sofa crying doesn't mean they're not in pain. Those signs of pain can be shown in different ways. Say, not playing with the football, not wanting to do these things. So we need to actually be looking through behaviour changes that are much more subtle than the person.
I've got a really heartwarming clip to play. This is National Geographic. Nearly 24 dogs are spending their golden years at a Heart with a Heart senior pet sanctuary. Cher and a team of visitors and volunteers come together in Maryland and spare no expense and care for the dog's every last need, from washing and feeding them to medications and vet clinics. Let's have a listen about what happens in that care home.
Hey, come on, guys.
We have dogs come to live with us until the end of their life, and we make sure that the end of their life is full of love and caring, lots of attention, and make sure they get all the medical care they need. They come to us from their rescues or folks who can't take care of them anymore. Maybe someone's going into a nursing home or a family member's passed away. So those dogs come to stay with us, and there's no longer any worries that they're going to be passed along again. This is the end, but it's a happy end. So we have Freddie, Logan, Jenny, Monroe, Sugar, TT, Sam. We have dogs who can't walk on their own, so we have two, Happy and Vicky, and they have little carts so they can go out in the yard and run and get some exercise that way. And we have dogs who are incontinent, dogs with cardiac problems, respiratory ailments, and so we just get them the best care that we possibly can from whatever specialist they need.
Who's a good baby?
It's pretty costly. Like this little guy, he probably cost us about $8,000 with very severe dental surgeries, and then he got an infection in his spine. It could have possibly come from the infection in his mouth. And so with the help of the short-term care that we had money in our bank account, and then our supporters helping us, you know, kind of top it off so that we could pay for it, Spencer is now recuperating and doing fine, and he's only 12, so we hope he'll be with us another 8 or 10 years, maybe. I usually get up about 6 in the morning, and the dogs need you right away. You have to get them out, do the feeding, medications, get them all back out again. Then I need to go downstairs to the kennel area and take care of the dogs who are visiting with us. So you figure there's 24 or 25 residents plus another 10 or 15, and they all need something. So that keeps me busy. Then the volunteers start arriving usually around 11. Vicky first. Okay. And it was hard for me at first to have people coming and help, but now they're like family. And they do everything. They poop scoop the yards, do the gardening, and we have flowers and beautiful little gardens everywhere. They do the housekeeping, help do the medications, get baths, grooming, you name it, they do it.
What?
Whoops, come here.
Nobody's neglecting you.
I'm the one that will transport dogs to the emergency hospital or to outside in an emergency to a vet's office. Cher never leaves the house. She's always here.
I might go out in a year maybe 4 times, but not to movies or to a restaurant. I would be too nervous thinking, you know, is this one okay? Is that one okay? If I do leave, it does cause something in the house when I'm gone, so I worry about that.
One of the duties that I
like least is I am usually with the dogs when we say goodbye to them. We always want to be there with the pets. We never let them leave this world alone. They're loved until the very last moment and beyond.
We started putting pictures up as dogs passed away, just kind of, we'll put their picture up here. And of course, over time, there became more and more pictures, so we started calling it Stairway to Heaven.
We never forget them. We never forget them. They're always with us.
And that was Cher and her team at the House with a Heart Senior Pet Sanctuary. Sounds like a very happy place indeed. Get your pet-related questions in as soon as possible. It's Helen Farmer with you until 2 o'clock. Saeed's been on the text line saying, "Hi, my dog has sneeze attacks when she's excited or playing. She's a poodle original breed. What can I do for her? Any advice?"
Yes, I think first thing is try and get some videos of it. If you can actually catch the act, then there's a lot more that can be seen to do with it to try and diagnose it. There's a number of reasons for it. It may be that she's got a sort of slightly weak or small trachea that actually closes up when she gets very excited, and this is more of a reverse sneeze to try and clear that throat. So videos and get a vet checked.
Now we had a message in here. There's no name on this one, but I would love to get your opinion on it, guys. Question for the vets, please. I'm 15 years old and thinking about studying to be a vet after my exams. What is the most difficult part of your training and was it worth it? Dr. Stephanie, you can take this first.
Sarah and I are giving each other the eyes.
Dr. Sarah took about a footstep back from the microphone then.
Yeah, I think a lot of kids, you know, from a very young age have this idea that they want to be a vet. And I think it's beautiful because it shows that, you know, she probably really loves animals and is, you know, really caring and wants to get into that kind of a career. But what I would say is that it's a long period of study. In Australia, it was 5 years, and that was on top of another degree. So it's a big commitment. It's not an easy degree to get through. Having said that, I think if you're committed, you can do it. It's
a vocation, not a job.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's something that you really do commit your life to. I think the most difficult part is, you know, dealing with people and their grief and their...
Well, you just had me almost crying in the... Well, I was crying in the break talking about losing my dog. But it's not just about treating the animals. It's about treating people who are possibly feeling really vulnerable and worried and powerless because... They don't know about the health of their animals.
It is, and you see a lot of people who want to go into veterinary medicine because they want to work with animals, and they don't realise that probably two-thirds of the time you're working with the owners of the animals, the client, rather than just the pet. So, you know, people who are not people-friendly, it's probably not the career for them.
So what was the most difficult part of your training? Dr. Sarah, now this is where I can toot your horn. You were Cambridge's youngest graduate in veterinary surgery, so...
I was. But I think one of the hardest bits of it is when you get to vet school, you've worked really, really hard to get there, and you suddenly look around when you're in vet school, and for the first time in your life, you are not the most intelligent person in the room. And being brought down to earth with a massive bump is huge. Yeah, you suddenly become bottom of the heap rather than top. And that's quite a difficult thing to deal with as a sort of cocky 18-year-old.
So second part of our 15-year-old aspiring vet's question, is it worth it?
It depends what you're looking for. Do I get fulfilled by my job? Yes, I do. I love the animals. I love what I do. Is it financially rewarding? Not particularly.
Do you get WhatsApps of weird animal rashes at all hours?
Actually, if I get stopped by the police and they look at my phone, they probably think I was very strange because I have all sorts on there.
And Dr. Stephanie, what would you say to anyone thinking about being a vet?
Look, I think it's definitely worth it. Vet school changed my life. I was on a completely different pathway, went to vet school, and it totally changed the direction that I went in. And I'm no longer in clinical practice, but I love still working in the industry and working with vets like Dr. Sarah. So
you still hanker for it when you come round.
I do. I always want to see a little surgery.
Do you?
I'd love to pick up a scalpel again.
I think we can squeeze in one more question because this sounds like somebody needs a bit of advice. Message on here, no name on this one, saying my 14-year-old, my best friend is a 14-year-old mixed. He's been battling very serious arthritis with his back, hip and rear leg, and the past 2 months been seeing a vet for physio and hydrotherapy and made some improvements. However, on Saturday he fell, and yesterday the x-rays prove his femur in his right rear leg has two breaks in it. The vet gave him three options: surgery, amputation, or euthanize. He seems very happy when lying in bed or even walking around. His appetite is as strong as ever. At 14 and a half years old, what do you think I should do? I'm lost.
I think first thing is you can't not do anything. But my concern with this is you say that he fell. I'd want to know how far he fell and then if the break in that leg is appropriate for the fall that he had. Because at 14 and a half, you've got to be more suspicious as to whether there's a problem with the bone that made it break. So whether there's a bone cancer developing in there, and therefore you can't actually treat it by fixing the bone.
Okay. So maybe a closer look
yes,
at that
definitely.
Bone. Dr. Stephanie and Dr. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.